Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Good Radio Network, radio that does a world of good. This isn't your average talk radio show. We're blasting away the old tried and not so true mold. Instead, TGRN turns talk into action. And action leads to doing positive things for people, our environment, and even the animals.
Well, I'm only one person. What can I do?
A lot. Join host Frankie Picasso while she turns talk into doing and gets results. This is the Good Radio Network. Yes, you can do it if you try, even if you're just a regular guy. Now, here's your host, Frankie Picasso.
Good day and welcome to the Good Radio Network, positive radio that does a world of good. What a fantastic day it is in the land of frozen snow and ice. The snow is actually starting to melt and I can see patches of grass below. So this is very exciting for us here because we can kind of sniff spring. The birds are even singing, so that's great. Well, since last we met, Aoi Bawawi is about to lead the military. Ooh, but that's a big secret. So I can't tell you any more until next Monday, and then I'll tell you all of it next Thursday. We are still looking for movie makers for our Kickstarter campaign, as well as ambassadors of good to feature and follow these stories and our guests on their blogs. So if you're interested, please get in touch with us at the Good Radio Network at Outlook.com. You know, I love creative people, and my guest today is an artist and a humanitarian who has done so many things that I almost want to say, Tinker Tailor Candlestick Maker. I mean, so true. She's absolutely fearless. She's tried her hands at many things, including printmaking, painting, theater, catering, directing a handbell choir, working as a tour guide, and just a moment ago, I learned a rock and roll artist. In 1998, her life was changed when she traveled with her daughters from Tanzania to Zimbabwe, and she purchased a wooden figure from a crafts market in Victoria Falls. And there, an artist asked her if she would try to sell some of their work in the U.S. And thus began the African Artist Community Development Project. But I'm not going to tell you any more about it. Let's bring Marsha Winsrig on and let her tell her story herself. Hello, Marsha, and welcome to the Good Radio Network.
Hi, Frankie. Thanks so much for having me.
It is such a pleasure. Now, I just heard that you were in Africa only 2 weeks ago, so it's perfect timing for you to be on our show because you can give us a view of, you know, like a real fresh view of what it's like to travel around there. Let's talk about the countryside for a moment.
Well, it's beautiful. I spend the last 2 weeks in Livingstone, Zambia, where Victoria Falls is about 7 miles away, and of course Victoria Falls is one of the wonders of the world and inspiring and a really spiritual place. It's called Muzi Otunya by the local people, which means smoke that thunders.
Wow, and, that's cool.
Anytime we go there, it's, you know, it's memorable. I don't know how else to say that this, you know, these falls are just, they're huge. They're 3,000 feet down.
Wow.
Yeah,
and are they near where they mine the rubies and the diamonds and stuff? Is that where a lot of the illegal activity happens?
No. Not that I've
Maybe
ever heard.
Maybe movie I saw.
Yeah, it's
Hollywood.
I'm
yeah.
not sure. That would have been South Africa, I believe.
Okay.
I'm guessing. But no, 7 miles away from the falls is Makuni Village, which is this huge traditional village of 10,000 people that has been carving wood since the 1300s for 7 centuries. It's hard to believe, but it's true. And so at the falls, they have a craft market filled with the carvings that these people make.
Now, are this a special kind of wood? Is this a tree that we don't get here?
There are some trees that we don't have here. One of them is called mukwa, but I don't know how it translates.
Sure.
It's a really light, it's kind of very lightweight wood, and they do a lot of the carving of the masks and the animals from that. But they also use ebony and teak
and
mahogany. So some of the wood is very hard and some is very soft, but they're expert craftsmen. They've been, as I say, they've been doing it for a long, long time. But because there are so many skilled carvers, the craft market is full to bursting with these beautiful objects, and there's a lot of repetition in the various shops, mm-hmm. and that's why in 1998, my friend Foster Wachata, who was one of the craftsmen, asked me if I would sell their crafts for them, just, you know, a couple boxes.
Sure.
And when I, you know, I back then there really wasn't much tourism, and I wanted to help them out because their things were beautiful, and I'm a craftsperson myself as well as an artist. And so I thought, well, okay, I'll try to sell a few of their things at Christmas time to my friends. And that's how I started. And eventually...
Did it feel overwhelming to you when they asked you? What was your first response? It was like, well, oh, wow, that's a lot of work.
I wasn't going to do anything major because I'm not a... It's not. I'm not a business person even, really. You know, I've never run a shop. It was never my ambition. And I thought, well, I'll do something small, something that I can do. You know, I'll have my friends over, and they'll buy some of these, and we'll see how it goes. But in fact, so they sent me the package after I had left, and after a while, I forgot that they had sent it to me. And then finally, one day, I got this huge battered package in the mail, and I could see it was from Zambia, and so I thought, oh wow, they're here, the crafts are here. And I opened it up, and I happened to, it was wrapped in newspaper, you know, their local newspaper, and I looked at the date on the newspaper, and it said only like 5 days before the date. I think it was like July 7th, and the date was July 2nd, and I thought, well, how could that be? And then I looked at the year. And they had sent it a year ago.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
A whole year to get to you.
Back then, you could send things on a boat.
Right.
You can't anymore because it's much, much cheaper. But it took a year to get to me.
Wow.
But, yeah, so that's how I began selling crafts. And after a couple of years...
Do they make the same figure? Sorry, Marcia, I just wanted to ask you, do they make the same figurines over and over? I know in Mexico you often find the same figure in the painting.
Yeah, they do. They do. There's people that specialize in giraffes and people that specialize in cheetahs, and some people do masks and carved wooden spoons. But even so, no two are exactly alike. You know, I think it depends on the piece of wood. You know, there's that hand quality in everything.
Which I love. I love that they're all original pieces. Yeah, that's great.
They're all works of art. And you do have to be careful, though, if you want to order 30 lions. You know, it gets a little boring, I think, you know, to make 30 lions. So it's much better to order a smaller number, and then you'll get much more attention to
detail.
Yeah.
And what would they sell for? Like, if you were at the market, if I was to go to the market, how much would I spend?
Well, they're pretty reasonable over there. They'll only cost you a few dollars.
Really?
To buy
there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't do a big markup here because my object is to sell as much as I can so I can reorder, because that was my original idea, was to try to support these craftspeople because they were trying to support their families and there was no tourism. So, you know, I wanted as much turnover as I could manage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And over the years, I began selling at flea markets and at the agricultural fair and out of my house often, having like little yard sales and things. And at some point, you know, I also went back to different parts of Africa because my daughter was studying in Tanzania, and we did some traveling together. And just going through the countryside and meeting people and staying at people's homes, you know, I began to feel a connection with this this other world, this other culture. They really, I mean, as human beings, we all share the same needs, but that said, it really was a different lifestyle and a different culture, you know, very warm, very welcoming, very lively, full of music and dance and beauty and
color.
Dressing, you know. Yeah, you know. And,
their clothes are beautifully colorful and designed. I really love to see the traditional African, you know.
Oh, I know. The women are so beautiful, and they they dress themselves beautifully and they carry themselves beautifully. There's a lot of pride, you know, and but there's also the elephant in the room was and is HIV/AIDS, which, you know, when I first started going to Africa was you couldn't even mention it. It was such a shameful thing and nobody would admit it. Nobody would talk about it. And that at least has changed. Also, people have access to medicine, which is a big change too. For years, I don't know why. There's lots of, you know, complicated governmental reasons and probably corruption figures in there. But in our country, for not making the things available or affordable. But now they are available and affordable, and so people.
I work with a doctor who would go there every year to work with, you know, patients, AIDS and HIV patients, and even the nurses. Like if somebody died, they would put bronchitis or something. They would not put HIV or AIDS down.
No.
And I think at that time it was like 70% of the population, because the truck drivers, they wouldn't wear condoms, and they couldn't afford them even if they could. I used to be in the condom business. And so I said, well, we'll send the women condoms. Yeah. I said, we can send the women, you know, at least the women can be responsible for themselves. And, but you know what? I guess, you know, like you said, income is not very big, and they really couldn't afford to buy them.
No, they can't afford tampons Kotex. It's really survival kind of income. Yeah. You know, they're really on the edge of survival. Many 80% of the people
that live
there.
You brought home a poster from public health. The poster was a man sitting on a couch with a woman, and it was just above it. You know, was like the bubble, just abstain.
Just say no.
That's the big answer, right?
No, it's not going to work.
You've got a country, like over 70% of the people, you know, have HIV or AIDS. That's huge. Like you said, one in three, you know, parents or whatever, you know, children have lost a parent to this horrible disease. And so you have a country, like, you know, filled with orphans.
Yeah.
Filled with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that you noticed that. As you traveled around, and
well, that,
you know,
was the impetus
to the plate
for using the money that I was making from selling the crafts, which wasn't a lot, but it was something.
Right.
And I wanted to invest it in some social welfare organization in the same neighborhood as the craftspeople lived in, because my hope was that this would grow and that it would become at some point a nice economic loop. You know, the craftsmen, I'm selling their crafts, and then I'm making money to send back to the Mama Bikita Cheshire Home for Disabled Children 7 miles away.
And are the artists also getting something for their wares?
Oh, yeah, I buy them.
Oh, you buy them from them. I see. Okay.
Yeah, I
got
buy
it.
Them, and I don't do too much negotiation. I kind of pay their top dollar, which still is cheap.
Right.
You know, they're not asking a lot for their things, you know. And so I double the price, and then I send the profits back to the Mama Bikita. And over the years, I've also developed some other programs where I'm sending about 12 or 13 young people to school.
That's awesome.
The youngest being a third grader who's going to a private school and who's brilliant and, you know, just he wanted so badly to go. And it was somebody, he was the son, or actually the nephew of one of the girls who is a student at the Mama Bikita Home for Disabled Kids.
Oh, okay.
And so I know everybody. I know their families.
Yeah,
when I
go
to Zambia every year, I visit them. I see how they're doing. And education.
What would it cost?
At that level, it's, let's see, 400 kwacha is about $70 a semester.
Wow.
This is primary school. But then at the other end, my Zambian associate over there, Sydney Mwamba, who's been helping me for 8 years now, I'm sending to university in Lusaka, and that's more like $5,000 for a year.
Wow.
Which is, you
that's
know.
That's what I paid when I went to university.
And it goes up every year. They don't go up just, you know, once in a while. It's just it's become really expensive. But My dream is when he graduates that we will start a company, and he will manage the company of selling exporting crafts from the Mikuni village. So,
do you have
and employing people. Excuse me?
Do you have any problem sending the money back there? I know that you know, I was involved a little bit with some people, and it was always difficult to send money or to send them things because
Western Union is
South Africa, and Western Union I think was the only one that
worked. It's highly reliable. And I'm not sending, you know, I think there's a limit. I can only send the maximum $500 in a day. That's how my bank is. So, you know, we're not talking thousands and thousands of dollars at a time. But I've never had a problem sending money.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Do you have any of this stuff photographed and on a website that people can purchase it?
I do. I have my website, the www.aacdpafrica.org.
Okay.
My website.
I'm going to go there right now. Yeah, because that would be fun.
Yeah, it is a site in progress, but I have a few things up, and I'm in the process of putting up more dolls and baskets and animals. Right now I have jewelry and dolls, and I'm working on adding more. Yeah, I just had a photographer.
What do they mean, Zambezi? I mean, that's where they're
Zambezi
from.
Zambezi is the river that Victoria Falls goes into the Zambezi, which is a huge, mighty river. It's so awe-inspiring and you know, wild and just a powerful, powerful river. And it's a very spiritual river where people often go to do their ceremonies and, you know, that sort of thing. So I thought it was a good name for the dolls.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know if they were like, you know, the little dolls from Mexico. They have, and they all do something, you know, like the Zunis, and they all have like a special meaning or something. Oh, look at these beautiful animals. Wow.
Yeah, and the silver animals. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
I
guess the wood is heavy.
Some of the wood is. Yeah, the silver is very light. The silver are from a whole different group, because over years I have connected with some other nonprofits that are run by local African people. And that's another one of my goals, is to just purchase crafts from other nonprofits, so that I'm not only buying, you know, helping artisans, I'm also helping the nonprofits to do their work in their communities.
Right. Nice. And because you were a singer, are you in African man? The music, the choirs were fantastic. Are you working with any choirs or anything? Are you?
Awesome. Well, I am actually. I work with a local choir that is run by a friend of mine, Roberta Kern, and she just calls it the community choir, and everything is done orally. You know, we don't read music. She teaches us the parts. She was very influenced by Issei Barnwell and Sweet Honey and the Rock, and works in that vein with gospel, a lot of African music. And in fact, we are getting together on next Wednesday, and I'm going to teach them one of the songs that I learned last time I was in Zambia, which is a really beautiful song. And I do have a video, and I'm going to put it on my website today.
Fantastic.
Because it's a beautiful song, and it means I give praise to my Creator because He has given me beautiful children.
Oh, wow.
And this is sung by the mothers of the disabled kids.
Wow.
And in fact, one of my most successful projects has been the making of these Zambezi dolls with the mothers of the disabled children at the Mama Bakita, because, you know, I would go and visit the Mama Bakita, and I could see this group. They were a loose social group of about 15, 16 women, and they were so down at heel. They had nothing. They had disabled children. Their husbands had all left because it was just too hard and shameful to have a disabled child. Children were actually, before the Mama Bakita, disabled children were hidden and not brought out.
Oh.
You kind of pretended you didn't have a disabled child.
Wow.
So the Mama Bakita, the reason that I support this cause is they have gone into the community and brought the children out into the light, literally, and, you know, worked with the kids and shown to the parents that these children can be valuable members of the society, that they can learn, that they can flourish. And what a gift that was for these parents who, before that, you know, had no choice but to feel ashamed.
Now, is it a the disabled, is it the full gamut, or are they mostly, it is,
no,
just
they're
everything?
They're everything, because there is no other group.
There's
no other place for them to go.
Wow.
Yeah, this is their only option, and before that, there was nothing.
So what in terms of care and help, people who are listening, if they're interested in volunteering or helping, what would you say, as far as these disabled children go, what is the most critical need for them?
Well, it's incredibly expensive to send clothing or supplies or anything like that. I mean, just today I sent a package of clothes, and it cost $100 to send about 12 pounds of clothes. So it's counterproductive to do that. But, you know, if you're in this area, you know, you can, there's a lot of ways you can volunteer with helping me at my sales and that sort of thing. But if you're not in the area and you want to help an effort that is really run by an individual, me, you can contribute. You can go to my website, and there's a donate button, beautiful donate button. And boy,
and what if you
we appreciate that.
What if you
want
to
go
to Africa?
Yes, I take people. Last year, I brought a yoga teacher, a drummer, and an individual who wanted to help out, and they came with me and spent 2 weeks there, which was wonderful because, you know, yoga is great for anybody, but the disabled kids really thrived on it. And the drumming, that was incredible because, of course, it's so much a part of their culture.
Sure.
And this young man, Rick Bausman, who runs drumming workshops he's been all over the world doing these drumming workshops, and he hired some of the craftsmen at this Makuni village to make drums for the kids. He had 10 drums made. They're big, like conga drums. And
then
he began a drumming circle with the children, and he trained Foster Wichata, who was one of the craftsmen there, to lead the drumming circle. So when he left, it could continue, and it continues to this day.
Wow. I'm going to hook you up with somebody, a friend of mine, Eddie Taduri. Eddie is working around the world. He started off as drums, but it's not drumming, and he works with disabled children to educate them through the use of the drum, and it's I've seen it in action, and it's absolutely amazing. And
Incredible.
It's called, what's he called? Trap. Trap Online. It's called Trap Online. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I just love it because there's so many people who are out there doing things, and when you can connect them and it doubles, you know, just kind of doubles and triples the effect that can happen.
That's right.
So cool.
That's right.
The Zambezi Doll Moms, is that who the God-given Gift Club, is that who they are, the mothers of these children?
That's
okay.
What they named themselves, because they feel so blessed. They have changed so much in the last 4 years since the dolls. You know, in the beginning, it's hard to make those dolls. And in the beginning, you know, some were more skilled than others, and we started out, I assume,
so
that each...
So did you come to train them to do that, or did somebody know how to do it and...
Well, we all worked together on it, and the first dolls were pretty crude. And
was this your idea then?
Yeah,
to make these dolls. Oh,
awesome! Yeah. Well, dolls are not a big part of the culture.
So
it wasn't a natural thing for them to do. You know, these are really not. These are made for sale, for playing, for, you know, cultures where children do play with dolls. And I mean, they do enjoy. I have donated the dolls to various preschools and schools and families in the area, but it's it's a new thing for them.
Okay.
And I send the women organic cotton cloth in various shades of brown, and I send them wool, natural wool for the hair, because neither of those things can be bought in Zambia. And they, you know, we have patterns. They cut out the outline of the doll, and so somebody does the cutting, somebody does the stitching. It's all hand stitching. They sew the form together. Somebody else stuffs the form with a sort of soft, what is it? It is like a some kind of fiber, like a not foam. It's like like a woolly fiber, and they stuff them. Somebody else sews on the face because that's really difficult. And somebody else puts on the hair. You know, they really share. It's a cooperative.
Right.
And they all
right.
come every day to work on these on a set of dolls. And as they finished 95 of the dolls when I arrived, and then we spent the 2 weeks I was there critiquing the dolls and fixing things because they have to be a really high quality. I sell the dolls for $40. And I pay them $25 each doll. So, and that's a lot of money, you know, like $95. That's almost, it's over $2,000. It's a lot of money.
Wow. Yeah,
and
that is a lot.
It's enough money to make a difference in their lives, especially to get it all at once. And they have a cooperative bank account. And they give each other, every woman gets a lump amount from this you know, big amount of money, but then the rest goes in the bank, and they use it to buy supplies, and because all the clothing is made with local fabric and beads and, you know, local things, and then they also give each other little loans that with interest. They let me know that they charge a little bit of interest. It's only a few dollars, but, you know, and so for each of them to start a small business, so that during the times when I'm not buying dolls, because I can only sell so many dolls so far. I hope to have that change, but they just keep them going through the year. And also they give each other emergency loans that don't have interest when somebody needs to send the child to Lusaka for medical attention, or to pay a school fee that they just don't have the money for, or take a test, you know. It's an incredible, very tight-knit group, and they're so wonderful, and they sing so beautifully.
You sent me a picture, and it's this wonderful picture. If you go to the goodradionetwork.com website or to Marcia's website, you can see the picture of the God-given gift group. Now, each of them is holding it looks like a sack or a purse. Do they also make these?
They do, and those are made from shopping bags. Like the very thin,
like
cheap kind that you would get. And they cut them in strips and turn it into yarn and crochet it. They're very, very good at crocheting.
How about that? Wow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I do have some of those, too.
Lovely. How much would they sell for?
It
I love that, because it's really, you know, using something that is going to fill up a landfill and does not break down and really, you know, recycling it into something useful. I love it.
Yeah.
So
and the colors
coming
out
of this, Marcia. God,
I know. I know. It's amazing. But, you know, I've been doing it for 12 years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, bit
you really
by
are an
bit.
Entrepreneur.
I guess,
you
although I never, ever would have thought. It didn't seem like, you know, it's really not in a way, well, parts of it I love, but the business part is a learning curve for me.
Right, right.
And the social media
what?
Part, we were talking about that.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. But I think, you know, I talk a lot about actionaries, because I think, you know, a lot of people can be visionaries and they can think about what they can do. But actionaries are people with vision that act on it. And so that really is where the big leap into entrepreneurialism is for me, is taking what you dream about and you know, turning it into something that's viable and real and hands-on, which you have done. So, you know, big, big kudos to you and to all the ladies.
Well, thank you.
And Mama Vegeta doing that. I just think it's absolutely amazing, and it really is, you know, why this show was started, so that people who sit at home and go, boy, I wish I could do something. You know, here's Marcia, you know, done all these, you know, artistic and different things in her life, has a passion for travel. You lived in Florence, didn't you? Italy for
I
a while?
Did. Yep.
And, you know, an artist and... But it doesn't, nothing holds you back. And they go, well, how, okay, so here's the big, here's the other elephant then. How do you afford all of this, Marcia? You're an artist. How do you afford to travel and go to these places as much as you do and take off and live in Italy for a year? So many people dream about doing that. Can you help us figure out how we can do that?
Well, I was very fortunate in that my husband was able to get work in Italy. So he, it was basically a trade-off. He is a cartoonist, and he worked at the International School of Cartooning for a year in Italy. So we were able to do that. And my family has helped me with the traveling since I've been doing the African thing, which started I incorporated in 2004. I think 2004 was the first time I went to the Mama Bikita. I had been to Africa before with my sister to visit my daughter, and then a couple other trips too. But Africa, the main expense is getting there. It's not cheap. You know, it's probably going to be $1,500 for your airline ticket. But once you're there, transport is pretty reasonable. Hotels are so cheap. Food is very inexpensive. It's not expensive once you're there.
So what would you eat while you're over there? Not McDonald's, I'm sure.
No.
Well,
it depends on where I am. When I'm at the Mama Bikita, you know, I live with them. I live in the guest house of the Mama Bikita home, which is this really charming, comfortable little compound that used to belong to an Indian merchant. And then the Council of Churches bought it in the 90s, and Sister Cecilia, who I just met for the first time on this trip, moved to the house and really was the first sister to go out into the community and find disabled children. She was charged with the mission trying to help disabled children in this community, and she's the one who began it.
How big a community is that?
The Livingston?
Like how many people would live there?
Oh, it's like a small town. I'm going to say 20,000 people in the whole area. I mean, it's a small, very small town. There's like two or three main roads and maybe 10 cross streets. But people live on all sides, sort of out into the countryside.
Sure. And so would these children come from directly from these 20,000?
Yes, they do. They do. And in fact, over the years, the Mama Bikita has been given a grant to buy a small minivan, and they go and collect the children each morning. They have a driver who goes out and brings the children to the school and then takes them home again. And I'm going to tell you, that is no easy job, because we think the roads here are bad after the snow and rain.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just looking at a picture of it right now as we're talking. I went online and I just put in Victoria Falls, and I found this amazing Africa travel resource site. And it's absolutely stunningly beautiful. But
it is.
It's just, boy, yeah, talk about barren and dry. Like, right, you know, some pictures are water. Other pictures are just pretty dried up. So it's interesting. I'm sure the landscape changes all the time.
It's actually, Livingston is not, I don't know. I don't think of it that way. It just, like the town itself has beautiful trees everywhere. It's very green and lush. And then the other countryside is like rolling, you know, there's a lot of brush. And the people, there are farming communities that live out in the bush, as they say, you know, and it's the land is actually quite fertile, and there usually is plenty of rain. This year was an anomaly, and they had no rain for 2 months, which is really kind of disastrous for the corn crop.
Did you ever feel afraid, or you feel safe going there?
Yeah, no, Zambia is great. I feel more nervous in New York City than I do in Zambia. No, people are great.
Okay. And what is the currency?
It's the kwacha. And it's $1 to 7 kwacha. But inflation is pretty bad, and every time I check, it's more. It's almost 8 kwacha now.
I'm just looking on this website. I just pulled it up because sometimes it's fun to look as you talk. And the Zambezi Sun Victoria Falls Hotel, you've probably seen that if you remember.
Oh, yeah, you pass it on the way to Victoria Falls, yes.
It's $300, it looks like, per person
yeah,
a night.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah, well, those are very wealthy tourists.
Okay. Okay. Very wealthy.
But there are, no, but you can stay in places like the Backpackers Lodge. How much was that? There's a Backpackers Lodge right in back of the Mama Paquita where I go and take a swim each evening. They're very nice. They let me swim. I don't know, what is it going to be, like $20 a night or something at the most?
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
There's a lot of places like that. But you have to be a little rough and ready. You know, you have to not mind a little noise and, you know, rooming with people.
You could certainly put a huge book together for people who wanted to go and change the world, you know, traveling Africa. That's really awesome. Yeah. So when you bring the stuff back now, are you you're bringing it back on a plane? They're able to ship it?
Yeah, no, I do both. I prefer, because the shipping is so outrageously expensive and getting more and more every month, I bring back the limit of what I can bring. But that's something that people, I was just thinking today, one of the things people could do if they go to Victoria Falls, to that area, is they can bring back crafts for me in like one of their suitcases. That would be a huge savings for me if people from, you know,
bring one
suitcase back. That would be complicated. But
what do they charge you at the, like, duty wise?
Nothing.
Do they charge you? Nothing.
No.
Okay.
Nothing. I'm only taking. I fill my suitcases, and you can 50 pounds each. So I take 100 pounds of crafts, but really, it's not a lot.
Right.
You know, I wish I could bring more. That's why one of the real advantages to having people go with me is I tell them they have to bring one empty suitcase that I can put crafts in.
What would a container cost you? Like, to fill a container on a boat?
Well, I couldn't do it, but I mean, someday.
Is there enough there, though?
Oh, yeah. There is enough, but that's on a whole different scale than I deal on. I'm really small time.
Right.
My basement is my warehouse, you know.
Okay. I'm thinking there's probably some really beautiful carvings, like big carvings and things that people would be interested in. But that's you wouldn't be able to have those home. Yeah. Wow. I understand you. So if you're listening, you know, get Marcia's address and then bring a suitcase back for her and help these amazing people.
I'll come meet you wherever you are.
Yeah.
Really,
it's
hundreds of dollars. It's like cost $200 to ship, I'm going to say 15 pounds.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It used to have slow mail. You know, it took like 3 or 4 months, but it was pretty reasonable. But now that doesn't exist anymore, there's only air mail, and it keeps getting more and more expensive. And I frankly don't know. I hope at some point to be able to do, you know, like a part of a container or something, but that's in the future.
Yeah. You know, even from U.S. to Canada, I ordered something the other day. Well, I was going to order it the other day, and it wasn't something that was heavy, and they wanted $120 in shipping. I'm like, are you people out of your mind? Yeah.
Oh,
I'm like,
that's
just, you know, what that is people making money on shipping and not on their product.
I think that's
what they're doing.
Huh.
Yeah. Crazy.
Oh, I didn't
really
know it was
crazy.
That bad.
And you know what? I mean, like, you're nonprofit. You're trying to help people.
But there is no, discount for nonprofits shipping, unfortunately.
That's something that needs to change.
Well,
people could work on. So if anybody's in, you know, advocacy, legal work or whatever, there's something else you can talk about.
Yeah.
You can help Marcia with that. And these are what, you know, when I talked at the beginning of the show, ambassadors of good, that's what, you know, I'm looking for. We're looking for people who can help support my guests and the people who come on the show and with their projects and their things that they're doing to change the lives and the world around us. Because, you know, it's all important. We help other people and it comes back and helps us too. And I'm sure that your life has been enriched by you know, what you've started to do there, for sure.
Yeah. But it's, to me, it's so interesting that it wasn't anything I ever planned. It just happened.
And that's it, you know. Like I say that opportunities aren't lost, they're just not actioned upon. And people always, you know, oh, I never had the opportunity. You know what? Opportunities happen to us all the time. And you are just a really brave soul who acted on it. Like, that's amazing. What do your kids think about you?
My kids are even more out there than I am. Some of them,
well,
anyway.
Because you had, they had you as a mom, you know?
Well, yeah. It part of it is just, you know, having some sort of confidence that things are going to be okay, and that, you know, it's okay to experiment and some things.
Right.
The courage to fail also is important. You know,
yeah.
Not all of my projects have worked out. You know, probably
right.
Not even most of them.
Yeah. Well, but and that's okay.
It is.
And that's
it's
okay.
How you learn.
Yeah. That's how you learn. And
yeah.
You know what? But at least you have the courage to do it. The courage to fail and really failure, you know, we talk about Dennis Waitley talks about failure not being the undertaker, you know, is
yeah.
It's true. Yeah. But that's the spirit, you know, that's the spirit of giving and getting. And it's absolutely amazing. I'm so happy that, you know, that I met you, because I just love people like you. Awesome.
Oh. Well, I was trying to remember how you did find me. I can't remember.
I've probably found you last year, even, or a couple of years ago.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah,
I just remember.
Something came up, and probably through Facebook or LinkedIn or something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I think it was LinkedIn, actually.
It
could have
been LinkedIn.
Yeah. Because I remember seeing your name and thinking, what a fabulous name. Who is that? Frankie Picasso.
He's got to
be somebody amazing.
I was going to Mr. Picasso. Yeah, it's kind of funny. What was it like to live in Italy? Oh, that's exciting.
Oh, it was fabulous. You know, being an artist, it was like living in art school. And I everything, you know, I left my whole life behind, and I just made art every day and went and saw art every day. I bought this pass that it would get you into all the state museums. I think I paid 100 euros for a year-long pass, and I could walk in. I didn't have to wait in any lines. I could walk into any of the state museums, the Uffizi and the Academia, and see my favorite work. You know, I got to know them so well that I had favorite paintings, and I would go in and draw sculpture, and I learned to cook Italian food and made wonderful friends, and I learned Italian. That was my main goal, actually, was to learn.
Oh,
was
it? You've got a really beautiful style. Your painting style is very interesting, very colorful.
Well, thank you.
Similar, like, I love color.
Well, I love color, too.
Color
is my my thing.
Yeah.
Well, I've been trying to go online to see your paintings. I haven't been able to yet, but
I sent you a link, I think, earlier. But, I like a lot of color, too. And I'm trying to loosen up even more so I can get to how you paint. Because I love that. You know, like Picasso said, you know, it takes to anyone can learn to paint or whatever, something like that, a lifetime to paint like a child. And it's true. The simpler you want to paint, the more difficult it is. Really.
I know. But that's the whole thing about judging. You know, judging your work. You got to leave that judge out of the door.
Yeah.
Say, you're not coming in for a while. I'm just going to do it just for fun.
Good advice, you know, really is. Because too often, you know, even the artisans that you're bringing, you know, over here, you do this work, and it's you. I mean, you know, you're putting you out there on a plate, and so it's personal. You know, it's not impersonal.
Yeah.
It's personal.
No.
It's personal when you create. So it is kind of hard, but very interesting. You got very interesting style, and catering. Wow. Do you cater Italian food?
I cater anything. I mean, catering was how I fed my family when they were young. My kids are all grown now, but, you know, that was, you know, I graduated in art with a major in sculpture, and, you know, I didn't look like I was going to make a living from that. So I started to do the thing I knew best, which was cooking. And I worked in New York in a catering establishment, and you know, kind of went from there and did it for like 20 years, and it was very, very stressful, but it was also it maintained the family, so it was, you know, I did it.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot.
I'm interested about the women in Africa. If I'd be love to have like a cookbook. Or do they cook? Do they have the means to cook?
They do. They cook every day. In fact, the women each take turns cooking lunch for the children. They cook the children's lunch at school, and they cook it outside over a little fire, a little charcoal fire, and they have their big pot, and somebody will make the nshima, which is basically grits, and so, and on another fire they'll have a pot of, it could be kale or it could be beans, or there'll be some other what they call relish that they'll put on the plate with the nshima, and that will be lunch for the kids and for themselves.
And what's the typically vegetarian or meat? Like, what would the meat be?
That,
goat? Or?
Well, if they can afford, know that, well, I never had goat there. I imagine some, I've seen goats there. I know in Makuni Village, I see goats wandering around, but mostly chicken, many people raise chickens for the eggs and for the meat. And I guess
I'm assuming
some beef,
that drumhead was made out of goat, because I've got a couple of goat head djembes. So I thought they would probably finish off after eating
the animal. It's very possible. Yeah. Very possible. Yeah. I don't know what leather the drumhead was made from, but
chicken,
a lot of chicken. In fact, one of the projects I had was a woman who was brought to my attention because a drunk driver crashed into her house and killed half of her family. And
oh,
I was
my God.
So stunned. I know. This was a while ago. This was like 5 years ago. And she was the friend of a woman that I was helping to go to nursing school. And so my friend Scholastica wrote to me and told me of this terrible situation, and they're very poor family, so they couldn't get justice. The drunk driver went and paid off the police, and he was never even accused.
Wow.
And I was horrified, and so I wrote an email, and I just sent it out to everyone I knew, asking them to send me $10 for that. I told them, I described the situation, and I got $1,000 in the space of a week, which I sent to them, and that began a relationship with this woman. And then we helped them build a house. They moved out of town and built their own house, and over many years, it took a long time. And then now I'm helping to pay for her education as a nurse, because a nurse is a pretty reliable income source. It's a good job over there. And well, why did I start to tell you this? I was talking about one of the projects. Oh, I forgot where I was going with this.
Oh, I asked you about the food, the cookbook. No?
Well, oh, I know. Now, that's right, food. So as a thanks, one time when I was in Zambia, they invited me out to their house, the new house that they had finished, for a chicken. They said, we're going to give you a chicken dinner. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, that's great. Now, I assumed we were all going to sit down to a chicken dinner. But I got there, and they sat me down in the guest of honor, and I'm talking to her husband and her adorable little girl named Pretty. And I gave her little girl a Zambezi doll, and we're talking. And meanwhile, this woman, whose name is Holiness, and she is kind of angelic, was cooking a chicken, just roasting one chicken over a fire, and very carefully roasting it and turning it, and it was, you know, it was beautiful, it was all golden. And then when it was done, she put it in a bag, and she gave it to me, and I realized that this was a gift that I was supposed to take home, that we weren't having dinner together. She was giving me a chicken. A cooked chicken, and that was so. I thanked her, and I went back to the Mama Bakita, and the sisters, you know, were all like sniffing that. That smells good. I said, yeah. I said, Holiness gave me a chicken. She said, oh, you have a village chicken. She said, there's nothing better than a village chicken. So I shared it with her, and Holiness had, I think, maybe 5 chickens total. So she killed one of her chickens. And roasted it, and that was, and it, and she said, then one of the sisters said, it's a very traditional gift to give somebody. And so we all sat down that night, and I shared my chicken with the other sisters, and it was one of the best chickens I'd ever had. You know, it's like the original free-range chicken, right? you know.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
simple food, and the vegetables are delicious, and they're homegrown, and, you know, people grow them in little plots. There's no huge agribusiness, or there probably is some, but, you know, when you buy your vegetables from the little market stalls
sure.
on the street, they're people's gardens.
Yeah.
And they're delicious,
yeah.
you know.
Is it spicy or bland?
No, it's not spicy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have like a chili sauce on the side if you want to be spicy.
Right.
But it's pretty straightforward food, what I've had.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
cook a lot of greens that we don't cook. They cook pumpkin leaves with peanuts.
Oh.
And they cook sweet potato vine leaves. They
oh.
grow a certain kind of sweet potato just for its greens. And it's delicious. It's like spinach.
Wow.
And a lot of greens that we don't have. And even
and beans,
vegetables
beans,
we don't have.
Beans?
A fair amount, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But the big staple is in Shima, mealy meal. Everybody eats that
oh.
every day, and they don't
okay.
feel right if they don't have some.
I love it.
A lot of sugar, too. They love sugar. They drink soda if they can afford it, and a lot of sugar in their tea and their teeth. I must say their teeth are indicative of all that sugar. But
Right.
What are you going to do?
Wow. Yeah, well, you're listening to Marcia Winstrick. She's my guest today on the show, and you know, she, amazing woman that she is, started the African Artist Community Project, and you should go to her website, and I'm going to give it to you. You can give it to us again, actually.
Okay, it's aacdpafrica.org.
And go to there, and you'll see artifacts for sale. You can read more about Marcia on there, see the Mama Bakita home, and you've even got 2015 tours, and these are tours
That's
that you're
right.
going to take people on?
Well, the 2015 tour just ended. I just
okay.
came back from that one, but there'll be another one in 2016. Every February I go, and I love to bring people with me.
Because it says in October you're going to go to Florence.
Well, that's true. I have a Florence trip in October. Yeah, that's true. I take small groups to Florence and show them all my favorite sites, and we go to private museums and beautiful villas and eat fantastic food, and we have a really good time. Yeah.
How much is that trip?
Well, I
that's
think
easy.
It's $19.50 for double occupancy. And that's for
and that's
a week.
Food, traveling,
it's
everything.
It's everything except
wow.
airfare.
Okay. Okay.
And the profits from that go to the AACDP.
Nice.
So any money I make off of my expenses goes into the AACDP. I just thought, actually, it was my daughter's idea. She says, Mom, you should do tours and to raise money. I thought, oh, that would be fun. And it is fun.
Well, you know, it sounds like your family loves to travel. You started off being born in Chicago, went to the West Coast, came back to the East Coast. So I think it comes probably honestly to you.
Yeah, definitely.
And are your kids still, do they still travel quite a bit? Like what made your daughter go to Africa for school? Or was it Tanzania? Where'd she go?
It was in
Tanzania.
And her father is African-American. And
okay.
when she reached college, she wanted to check out Africa. And she looked at a
okay.
bunch of different schools and chose Tanzania. And really fell in love with it. So that's how that all began.
Oh, okay.
Did a lot of traveling in Africa as well once she was there. Because as I say, it's pretty cheap to travel within Africa, not on airplanes,
right.
but on trains and buses and things like that.
Right. And I know I have a friend who thought Tanzania was like the greatest place ever to
holiday. Oh, it is.
And
it is wonderful.
It's really
Zanzibar
beautiful.
Is just a dream. It's really, really
wow.
exotic and beautiful, and yeah.
I, you know what, I want to go so badly, and I have absolutely no patience on the airplane. I just like getting out of here.
Oh,
so
it's hard. It's hard to get there from here.
Yeah, it really is. But I'm gonna bite the bullet one day and do that. Marcia, thank you so much for coming on the show and being my guest today.
Oh,
I learned
a
lot.
Pleasure, Frankie. You were wonderful. I'm really so thrilled to have this opportunity.
Well, I hope that we can, you know, help you in the future and see what we can do to boost some sales. And if anybody's listening, again, you know, there'll probably be downloads. And get in touch with Marcia. You want to give your email or
sure
get to you through the site?
But It's my name, which, of course, as Frankie knows, is difficult to spell.
I only spelled it wrong 10 times. Yeah.
But it's my name, MarshaWinsryg, at me.com. That's my email.
There you
and
go.
But you can find it on my website, too.
Yeah, yeah. Look it up. She's got two websites. She's got the African, project website, and she also has her own website, which you can
under my name. Well, thank you. That's true.
Yeah, it is true. All right. Well, thank you again for being my guest. I really appreciate you coming on today. And for those of you who have been listening or will download later, thank you so much for checking us out and being loyal listeners. And we will be back next week. Take care, everybody. Bye, Marsha. See you later.
Bye, Frankie. Happy spring.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.